Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00045. Recorded on May 10, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Betosis. Betosis. Chapter 45.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Nothing makes a man seem older, perhaps older than he even is, when he starts off a sentence with terms like, back in my day, or when I was a young man, or a little boy. So, salute. I'm an old man, right? I'm an old man. I don't feel that way. People older than me are jealous of my age. But in the grand scheme of things, if I was in my 20s or 30s, I would think I was an old bastard, right? So, let it be written, let it be done. When I was a little boy, back in my day, get the fuck off my lawn, right? Early 70s, you know, early, probably like 1971 or so. I lived in the city of Hillside, New Jersey. Hillside, New Jersey, in the corner of Hillside. I guess it would be the western end of that small city. Conveniently nestled between Newark and Irvington, right? My little neighborhood is practically Newark, right? A little semi-industrial neighborhood. Well, not even say it was industrial. There was factories and plants kind of all around it. When you got any other side of factories and plants, you were in either Newark or Irvington, pretty much. But anyway, it was a city, right? It was a city. My neighborhood was sort of kind of like an Archie Bunker neighborhood, right? When you see All in the Family roll, it's opening credits, similar neighborhood to that. And I'm thinking I was probably in the area of 4 years old. That would put it probably 1971, right? So we're going back 50 years. And that's remarkable. I can even tell stories that happened 50 years ago. I didn't think I'd lived at 20. But anyway, 50 years ago, 1971. It's actually 52 years ago. I was a kid wandering around the neighborhood, and, you know, the way it was back then, kids would just kind of come outside. You'd pop out, you'd step out to the curb, you'd look left, you'd look right, see if there was other kids doing the same thing, right, trying to find each other. There were plenty of kids around. You always find somebody to play with. That's just the way things were. And but that's what you do. You didn't see anybody, you start kind of wandering around, you know. till you find some other kids to go make trouble with. And I was wandering around. I was in that stage of wandering around. I get a few houses up the block, and there was this kid who lived, him and his sister and a single mother, right? There was no father. They shared like a duplex kind of house. It was kind of oddball in the neighborhood, and it was next to like an empty lot, right? And the empty lot, somebody related to that family was staging a puppet show, you know, like a real professional puppet show, you know, puppets and all that shit. And they had all these chairs lined up, and they were like collecting money, basically. You know, they made a little gate entrance, a little ticket booth, and you come up and give them $1 or whatever they were charging, and you get a seat and you sit down and watch the puppet show. I was 4 years old. I didn't get all that. All I saw was a bunch of kids sitting in seats and signs saying puppet show. And I just went up to the seats and took a seat. You know, I was going to watch a puppet show. Somebody came over and very politely explained to me that if you want to watch the show, you got to pay whatever the money was. I didn't have any money. I was 4 years old, right? So all dejected, I kind of like wandered off of that lot. And I kind of turned around and looked back. And everybody, you know, was... The puppets come out and they all applaud and yeah, giggling and laughing. And there I was all by myself without the money to get in, right? And I just wandered around. And like, you know, it was summertime. I wasn't in school. If I was in school, I would have been in nursery school. Right? I wasn't even in kindergarten at that point. But somehow, some way, I came up with this brilliant idea. Well, if I can't be at the puppet show, I'm just going to make a puppet show my own, right? And it just, the idea was in conjunction, you know, I saw some kind of thing. I get this shit that rolls by my social media that's pertinent to us old-timers, right? Or the Gen Xers. You know, there's a lot of comparisons, you know, to what kids have now versus what it was like for us back then. Now kids got their smartphones that they're reading everything off of, you know. So you're sitting at the breakfast table with your cereal and you're checking out things on your smartphone. Where back then you would sit at the breakfast table and you would read the fucking cereal box, right? That's where you got like 90% of your information from, you know. You read cereal boxes in the backside of baseball cards, Bazooka Joe comic strips in the bubble gum. That's what you got to read when you were 4 years old in 1971, right? So reading a box, we had some kind of box. It was like Count Chocula and Frankenberry, and they had cutouts on the box, right? They were finger puppets. You like cut them out. They had the characters from all those monster suite of sugary cereal breakfast treats. The Boo Berry and the Count Dracula, the Count Chocula it was, and the Frankenberry, right? So you just get your like knife or your scissors out and you cut these cutouts. There was these characters, and at the bottom of them, they had these tabs that you would wrap around your finger and just get a little piece of tape it around. So now you hold your finger up, and you got like a Frankenberry on it, right? So I got this idea. Let's make our own puppet show. So my little brother is like a year younger than me. I don't know. I might have been 5. He might have been 4. I might have been 4. He might have been 3. It was somewhere around there, like 71, 72. And that was like Little Rascals. We made up our own little sign about puppet show, and we charged like a quarter for everybody to get in. We put the sign at the end of the driveway, and whatever chairs we had, we put out, you know. And all we did was, this is funny, because we had a two-car garage that was kind of set off the house in the backyard, at the back of the backyard. And on the one side of the garage, my father kept a beat-up old VW Beetle that he planned on restoring and never did, right? It just sat there in the garage. So it was a plaything for me and my brother. We always played inside the car, the Volkswagen. And the other side was actually an active entryway to park a car inside, or lawn equipment, shit like that. It was kept. And what we did is basically we went in the side with that old beat up Volkswagen, and we would stand up. Now we had the garage doors had like 4 or 5 window pane panels in each of them, and most of them were blown out. I used to take like a tennis ball or a little rubber ball or something like that and throw it against that door. Like, I was a little baseball player from the time I could walk, you know, and I always had an arm. My arm always got me in trouble. And I would pick kind of like a spot on the garage door as a target, and I would throw, you know, I'd practice my pitching wind up and release, and I would throw at the garage, and every once in a while one would get away, and every once in a while when one got away, one would go through one of them fucking panes of glass, and it pissed my father off because I was constantly doing it. There's nowhere else for me to throw a ball, right? And so we had a couple of those panes of glass broken out of the garage door. We had that Volkswagen parked inside the garage behind it. And so what we did is, me and my little brother, we got up with our little Frankenberry and Count Chocula finger puppets. All these kids are sitting. It was unbelievable. We just put a sign up, 25-cent puppet show, probably spelled it wrong. And there was like 15 kids, and half of them I never even seen before. They came out of nowhere, right? And they were just like sitting down in the fucking driveway in front of the garage door. And I took, you know, we stood up on the bumper of the car so we could reach up to where the pane window glass was. And I selected a busted out portion so we could kind of speak through it. And we were just dancing these finger puppets up and down in that empty, broken window, right? And that was our puppet show. No monologue, no dialogue, no music, no nothing. Oh, they were booing and hissing and chucking shit at us. We didn't know any better, right? We didn't know any better. We gave it a try. They were all upset. My mother, like, came out and gave them all their money back, and they're all cussing at us. But, you know, we didn't know. It was, you know, an early sign of my personal initiative to kind of take the bull by the horns and do it yourself, right? And do it yourself, DIY, that is kind of part of the characteristic traits of a Generation Xer, right? The old do it yourself. We were the do it yourself generation. As well as some other things, but do-it-yourself is cool, right? That's the DIY. But then there's the DIP part of it, and that was the doing it poorly, right? Can't forget about that. Yeah, you do it yourself, but if you do it poorly, it fucking blows. And that was the case with my puppet show, at least. And there's other things in my life like that. You know, it's like I enjoy what I enjoy, just like anybody else, right? There's certain things that you enjoy. And when I enjoy something, I want to become part of it. I want to do it too, right? With the baseball, I mentioned that when I was a kid. It's like I really like baseball, so I wanted to play baseball. And I did it all the time, and I was actually really, really good at it, it turned out, right? And that would have been the gift of my life, that should have been the basis for everything I did until I wrecked it as a teenager on drugs, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But you heard that story. It's another story, and I'm not going to tell it here, but, you know, it's just always been part of my way. A better example, right, because something I'm not really great at, something I don't have a natural talent for, is the guitar. I love guitar. I love guitar music, and I'm fascinated by those guys who just whip around on the fretboard, and they just do all kinds of crazy stuff. And I love it so much that I just want to do it too, you know? I want to do it. I want to make music my way, music I want to hear. And I go and try, and I just don't have the natural gift for it. But I kept on trying. And yeah, I mean, I picked up a guitar. My first guitar, I was 14, I think. 14 years old. So I pretty much started playing then, and I've been pretty much playing ever since. I never took lessons, right? Never bothered to actually do what people do to get good on guitar. I just figured I'd figure it all out, and it would come in time. Had I taken lessons, I'd probably be better. But I don't really have the natural gift. I never had the natural ear for music. That's something that people are born with. You have it or you don't. I don't. In fact, I was kind of tone deaf until I was in my early 20s. When that broke, I got a lot better at guitar real quick. You know, people could sit and listen to what I was playing after that. Before it, I never really could have the guitar in tune. And it wasn't like we had digital tuners and shit back then, you know, like we do now. You know, you don't have to be able to hear what you're doing. You could see what you're doing and know it's okay and just start playing away. But anyway, that tone deafness or whatever, it's semi-tone deafness, broke when I was like 22. And I immediately just started getting better. And I'm pretty good. You know, it's like I could play and you could sit there and listen to it. But I'm not like professional good. And I never will be. Because that's a gift, right? The ear for music. But also, there's a lot of things. Your hand size, your finger shape. Just the way your mind processes mathematics, the way you see the fretboard, how it all comes together, and there are people that could just pick up a guitar and start playing, and within an hour they're guitar players. That's what the gift is like, and I don't have it, and I readily admit it. Right? If I did, I'd be playing, I'd be making money at it. I know I'm not worth a damn. I could use it to write songs, but I like the songs that I make, and nobody else does. You know, I mean, they're all right, but why would you listen to this shit when you can listen to something professionally done? But that's another example of do-it-yourself. I do the best I can, but compared to what's available out there, it's poorly done. Got to admit it, right? Got to admit it. Ain't horrible, but relative to the commercial stuff, it just ain't there. It's not at that level. And there's just so many things. A big reason why I got so many hobbies, right? I talk about all these hobbies that I have that I just can never seem to get into, is because my admiration for people who do this stuff, the skills that people have. I want to be like that. I get inspired to become, you know, I see the potential in things and I want to give it a try. And I try a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff sticks, a lot of it don't. You know, and what I'm doing now, you know, what I'm doing now with this audio podcast is in the same regard. I am a fan of people who do such things. I like to listen to people expounding their thoughts on things, you know, and I like some better than others, and there's a bunch of different factors that play into, well, my taste and your taste, you know, and what makes our taste different, what makes certain podcasters, makes certain like radio show hosts appeal to us. The sound and timbre of the voice is one thing. The attitude of the person is another. The person's beliefs and opinions, the person's accessibility to exclusive information, the subject matter in general. It's a result of all those things. These all come into place. Now, of course, the way like people do business, right? They're making money. They're professional. And where's the money coming from? You know, the advertising, the ads you have to listen to when they're doing a show, and things like all these things, like all come together and factor into one's assessment of one of these voices out there in the air. And I think overall, probably the most influential guy that I have over time, the guy who's probably most like me, like if I was doing this, or I am, so I am, what I'm doing would be more like what that guy's doing. It's what he's talking about. It's what he's getting to. Of course, it's not the same, right? That guy's that guy, and I'm this guy over here. I have my style, right? There's different style points, but it's really the generally the same genre of talk radio, of audio podcasting. And that guy, he's a Texan, and I mentioned him before, right? In my introductory podcast episode, Welcome to Post Arlen, Texas. I was talking about all kinds of Texas things. And this guy, he, in my book, he's not just a Texas thing. He's a Texas legend. Now, you may or may not have heard of him. He is, he has a degree of fame, especially in and amongst the UFO alien crowd. And I'm not saying he's a UFO alien guy, all right? He's more than that. He's better than that. But he did the Coast to Coast AM radio show back in the days. He was one of the weekend guys. And to my taste, immediately, because I used to listen to it back then with the Art Bell and the George Norrie, and they had the other weekend guy, or the fill-in guy, Ian Punnett. And then there was this dude, John B. Wells. And I would hear him when he did his shit on the weekends. That's the guy I wanted to listen to. I knew it right away. I knew it right. He was different. He was different than the rest of all them, right? I listened to it for Art Bell. And I settled for the other two. Or not. Or just tuned out, you know. But when John B. Wells came on, that show became something else. Right? And, well, he got fired from that job, you know, the way I understand it. I don't really know the whole story. The gist of it that I got is that he was being a little bit too truthful and kind of bucking some important people. Dude's a maverick spirit, and that's what I'm talking about, you know. That's what I relate to. That's how I feel in some degree. I resemble him in what I'm doing here. Of course, he's the professional again, right? He's the professional, the great voice, the golden voice. He does. He's just got that. He's one of those guys that just got that great voice. You know, he could read a phone book to you and you'd pay money to listen to it, right? He's one of those people. Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, they just got the voice. And those people that have that voice in the business, they call it pipes, right? They're pipes. I don't have it. I got a shitty amalgamation of a variety of accents that you can't rely on. You don't know what you're going to get minute to minute with me. You know? Whether it's going to be Jersey or Hillbilly or Texas or Georgian Southern, or, you know, you don't know what's going to come dribbling out of my mouth. But John B. Wells, a solid Texas guy, and the golden voice, a professional, an actual radio guy, and he does his own thing now. Right? Like I said, he's a maverick. Absolutely a maverick, you know. Sticks to his beliefs, sticks to his guns, and a man of faith, and he ain't afraid to say it. And he talks about shit that a lot of people would never dare to put out there on the air for fear, right? Good dude. And I've been listening to him like anybody else. I got to admit, it's on and off. I just do. A lot of the stuff involves politics, and I can only really immerse myself in political stuff so much for so often before I have to back away and kind of clear my head and recenter myself to what's really important in my life and everybody else around me's life is my faith, right? But just when I'm thinking, oh man, he's, you know, too much politics, he breaks out something about faith. And, you know, I'm won over all again. And he does, his show is called Caravan to Midnight, is what he does during the week. And then he's got a Saturday edition, Arc Midnight. And these things are broadcast on a variety of radio stations across the country. Now, it's not exactly syndicated ad nauseum where wherever you are, you can find it. All right. But you can always find it on the internet. If you go to, you know, look up John B. Wells or type in Caravan to Midnight. I believe it's caravantomidnight.com. And you could get started there listening to him. But you could find him on YouTube, and you could find him on Rumble and a variety of other places. He's out there on Twitter. And on Twitter, he will have everything listed out. If you want to give it a try, I recommend it. I really do. Like I was saying, he'll come out and break out scripture every once in a while, you know, where it's suitable to the line of conversation he's in the middle of. Now, he doesn't do, just so you understand, exclusively monologue, right? He does like a news reading thing for, a half hour or an hour before his actual radio show, right? So you get him on the internet, you could pick up this hour or so, half hour of his news. He calls it a news reading, but he reads headlines and then he throws in his opinion on stuff. And his opinion on stuff is very thoughtful. And he's got attitude. You know, he's a maverick dude. He's got attitude. And, you know, I like the attitude. It works for me. I'm sure anybody who could listen to me would probably enjoy listening to him even more so. But he'll break out the scriptural reference. He'll say stuff about the Bible. And he did. I was listening to what he was doing, I guess it was yesterday, sometime early in the week. It could have been yesterday or the day before. But he broke out the scripture. And it was just something I needed to hear, because it's something I frequently talk about out here. And I will make scriptural reference to the same basic topic. But seldom do I yield, grab it from the Gospels. I'd get it from the epistles instead, because that's what comes to mind first. But to hear it in the words of Jesus Christ so plainly, it's just something I needed. So the timing was great. You know, the timing was great. And I wanted to actually add it into my discussion here today, my monologue today. Again, it's from the book of Mark. It's chapter 7, and it's verses 20 through 23, right? And I'm going to just read it, and I'm going to work from there off it, right? This is not going to be a whole podcast about this gospel message. This is just a part of it that fits, and you'll see what I mean. Verse 20, right? And then he added, and this is Jesus Christ speaking, "It is what comes from inside you that defiles you. For from within, out of a person's heart, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder," remember murder, okay? "Adultery, greed, wickedness, deceit, lustful desires, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. All these vile things come from within. They are what defiles you." And Jesus is speaking in juxtaposition to food, right? Talking to the ancient Israelites, the Old Testament Israelites, they had food, dietary restrictions, foods that were clean and foods that were unclean. And this was the beginning of the change in that aspect of our faith, where all foods were okay to have. This would be confirmed later on by St. Peter in the book of Acts, when again he is given a message to, what does it say, hunt, kill, and eat. No, go do it. Anyhow, all right, that's a little side jag. The point here that I'm looking at that matters to me, it is the wellspring of the wicked. It is the root cause of our bad actions. And where does it come from? It comes from, as Jesus puts it, the heart. Now, the heart doesn't mean our beating heart, that muscle that pumps blood. The heart is the very core of us, and the very core of us is our spiritual essence. It is that part of us that carries on after the body dies, right? Goes into the afterlife. You could call it the soul, right? You call it the spirit. But the interesting thing to note here is that our wicked comes out of the very core of us. The evil is inherent. And Christians know also that that is exactly the same place where our Holy Spirit resides, in our heart. It's like I mentioned that puppet show with the people that lived in the duplex in the neighborhood, right? Your core, our core is kind of like a duplex, and you've got those dirty drug addict fucking neighbors living on the government tit in one door, and then you've got like the Holy Spirit, like the priest of the church that lives in the other one, right? And that is our duality. Right, that is our paradox. That is our dynamic circumstance that we're trapped in as human beings in the flesh. We have the duality of good and evil. And that is a result of what happened in the Garden of Eden, because it was the forbidden fruit came from that forbidden tree. What was that tree? It was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When Adam and Eve took of that forbidden fruit, the very core essence of their being was changed. Now we have evil inherently in that core. And that kind of sucks. What that does is it sets us up now for a lifetime of experiencing circumstances that challenge us to decide and to choose constantly, time and time again, between good and evil. The challenge of our lives is ultimately the choice between good and evil, making alliance, creating allegiance with either God or the devil. That is what, excuse me, that is what our existence is entirely about. Making that choice and sticking to it. Sticking to it, of course, is the theological concept of persevering in the faith. That matters. We don't just decide one day, okay, God, I'm on your team, and then let it be. We've got to continually reaffirm that decision. That is scriptural also. That concept is reiterated time and time again throughout the New Testament. I'm sure some of you out there will beg to differ, and then there's some of you that will beg to just obliterate all this antichrist motherfuckers, right? But that is the circumstances we are under in the world. I preach the concept that this world is supposed to suck. And there's a reason for it, you know. We are pretty much trapped. We're contained in a cage ruled over by Satan. And anything ruled over by Satan would be wicked, evil, and basically suck. And it would make our existence difficult. And it would cause us to seek God. Actually, it would cause us to seek some kind of solace from it all. And it's what we find solace in that ends up being God to us. For example, I had a problem with drugs and alcohol in my youth, right? That's where I went to for solace. That was not God, but it was my God. I didn't realize that so much at time, but that's exactly what it was. The drugs and the alcohol, the lifestyle of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, that was my religion. And at the core of it, the heart of it, was drugs. Everything I did and everything my friends did, everything we all did together, was centered around getting fucked up. Now, fishing is a great and wonderful thing. It's always a good time. But we wouldn't do that unless somebody had a bag of weed and a case of beer. Hey, you want to go fishing? Got any weed? No, that's exactly how it was. It was the center of our life. So what we put at the center of our life, and what I mean by that is the focus, our belief that changes our worldview, right? It affects who we are and how we behave in and amongst members of society otherwise. That's an important point. You know, that's an important point right there. So we make that choice where we allocate our loyalties to. Is it God or the devil, or like the Rush song, Free Will, on Permanent Waves, back in, what, 78, 79, says, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. And that part of the song is true. I'm not down with the whole rest of it, necessarily, but that part, that particular line is true. If you choose not to decide, and in this, here in this case, between good and evil, you still have made a choice. There is a default option that we fall into when we refuse to choose God. Even if we refuse to choose the devil, the default is the devil. If you want to be on God's team, if you want to be on the winning team, if you want to be on the right side of things, you have to go and get it. You have to go to it. You have to meet God on His terms and become a member of His family. Anything short of that defaults over to Satan. You could go right to Satan and say, I'm yours. And make it plain. But if you don't decide anything at all, if you're just kind of flippant and wishy-washy, indecisive, beta boy, and I'll get into some of that probably later. You default to the side of evil. Now, I pointed out in that list of wicked things that Jesus was speaking to back in that Mark 7 set of verses that I read, the word murder, right? Murder. Now, murder is a little different than killing. This is a matter of semantics, but they're important semantics. To kill is more of an umbrella term, and just about use an umbrella. The rain started coming down here. I'm sure you hear the pitter-patter of raindrops on the F-150 mobile studio. I apologize for that. That's a little unprofessional. That's kind of who I am right now, strictly bottom shelf at this and most things. Killing is an umbrella term to cover the termination of life in general, and that's all kinds of life. Murder, on the other hand, is more specific. It's exclusive to the termination of human life. And more specific than that is the idea of doing that termination of human life with intent. So murder, defined, is the termination of human life with the meaningful intent to accomplish that actual end. That's what murder is. And yeah, there's a reason I'm kind of meandering into the topic of murder at this point. But before I get to where I'm going, with it all, I want to stop for a minute and contemplate murder. What does it take for a person to murder another person? What are the causes that drive a person to do such a thing? So I put myself in the, like I said in the prior episode called Berserkowitz, right? I was talking about the son of Sam, David Berkowitz. He was the serial killer back in the late 70s in New York City, right? Well, 1977 specifically, the Summer of Sam. And let's pretend that we have murder on our mind. Let's look to our personal inner Berserkowitz and try to find reason that a man would go and kill another man. First thing that comes to my mind, and I think in most cases this would be the go-to reason. Vengeance, right? A matter of revenge. Somebody did something to me, now I'm going to retaliate. And as we play this retaliation game, when I do something back to him, then he's got vengeance, he's going to tell me. You get the escalation, and the escalation goes to the point of what? The termination of a human life, because that's the only way you end that process. That is the ultimate natural outcome of vengeance. Somebody's going to get killed. Maybe a lot of somebodies are going to get killed, right? So that's one reason for a man to murder another man. Another reason is to be hired as a professional assassin, a professional killer, for money, right? Do I need to even explain that? Somebody offers you a briefcase of $10,000 and says, go kill my wife. You see it in the movies and shit all the time, right? Kill my husband. Kill my coworker. Kill my boss. Here's a sack of fucking money, right? So you could do it for vengeance. You can do it for money. You could be extorted into it, right? I was listening to another Texas legend of the waves, Alex Jones, fairly recently for a little while, and he was talking about cartels, right? The Mexican cartels and how they operate, what they do with people to get things done. They're violent, they're bloody, they're murderers, they're killers, but a lot of times they will get other people to do their bidding for them by threatening their families. It's not different than what happens with like the Russian mafia and Brighton Beach up in New York City, where they import all these Eastern European and Central Asian dancers, beautiful women, into the United States, and then they set them off into a lifetime of pornography and prostitution, basically at gunpoint. They're either lied to, being told that they're going to be part of a international dancing troupe and make money that they could send back to their families, and then or they're just out and out kidnapped. But either way, when they make it to New York City or wherever they may end up, they're basically told, this is what you're going to do, and if you don't, we're going to kill your family. That is sex slavery. It is extortion, and that's another reason people may do things immoral. Now, I'm talking about murder specifically. That's not a situation of murder. Situation of murder is like the first example I gave you, more relative to the cartels in Mexico and how they operate with some people sometimes. But anyway, that's another reason, right? So you've got vengeance, and you've got the doing it for money, right? For vengeance, for money, because of extortion. And then the kind of wild card category, really related to Berserkowitz, right? You've got that serial killer, that person that's just mentally not with it. Got a mental illness issue, a mental health disorder of whatever type that just drives them to kill. That's more of a wild card thing. And I mean it. I mean that in the regards that whatever's going on with these people, it's going to vary person to person specifically, and any of their reasons can draw from the prior three reasons, right? But we'll just call it mental health issues. And that's four categories that come to mind quickly without even really thinking this through. If I did, I might find some others. But that seems to be four categories that kind of really catch it all. Why would a man murder another man? Pick one of those four. So how do we resolve these root causes? Well, that's why I read that scripture earlier, right? That scripture that that John Wells put out on the air and just kind of got me going. Because it's something in the heart, ultimately, that, to hear Jesus tell it, causes us to act out in wicked ways. Something in our heart has to change. And this is that decision that I was talking about. The decision for Christ or against Christ. When we refuse to decide in favor of Christ and allocate our loyalties to Him, we default automatically to that which is wicked. And this is our heart, the heart that contains good and evil. We choose for the evil becomes the dominant factor of our heart and reverberates through our entire being. That is the person who is most apt to murder. And the only way to correct that situation is to change your choice and turn to Christ and start to be transformed. Romans chapter 12, verse 2, I believe it's verse 2, talks about the transformation of the mind that happens with the Holy Spirit. And other things that Apostle Paul has written in his epistles speak to the fact of the battle that the Holy Spirit does within a man's heart against, well, he uses the word the flesh, but the flesh is that evil inside of us. It's an inside job that's going on, and that is your solution to murder, right? That is your solution to murder. You have this change of heart that happens. It's a decision for Christ, and what you're doing in that is submitting yourself to God's ways. And what is God's ways? It's basically, I mean, as at least a beginning point of understanding, his morality, right? Like the Ten Commandments, the categories of the Ten Commandments, which is almost lines up exactly with the list that Jesus put out, right? He included pretty much, well, so many of the things in the commandments and added some other things, reiterated some stuff along the way. But we're basically making a choice to abide, or at least try to abide, be aware of what we're doing through those commandments. And when we start to practice God's ways in our existence, we start to find the fruitful results of them. And then we learn to love them. You know, I thought it was strange when I first came to faith to read things, Old Testament things, both King David and King Solomon in their writings talked about this concept of loving God's law, loving the commands. And to me, that was always something that you hated. Even as an early Christian, I didn't like the commands. It was telling me to do the things that I didn't want to do and telling me not to do the things that I wanted to do. And that basically sucked. But I was new. And until I became practiced at God's way, I didn't understand how or why a person could even begin to love those restrictions. But it's such a better way of life. You actually liberate yourself from the evil in the world. And it's a whole different way of living. It's a whole different set of glasses by which to view existence through. And people who continually choose the wicked and choose against Jesus Christ and the holy faith, they have no idea what their quote-unquote opposition understands. We get this love for the law, and I accentuate that point, right? I want you to keep that mindful for a moment, because the next thing I'm going to get into is, sadly, I don't really get into news stories and current events. I differ from John B. Wells or Alex Jones in that regard. I don't really get into news headlines, and I don't like to talk politics all too much. But I do talk about DFW. I do talk about Texas. That is a big chunk of the premise of my points of discussion, right? And well, over the weekend, this past weekend, we had a couple of mass murders in Texas that made national headlines. And one of them was right here in my playground, you know, my area. Literally, the town where I go to church, Allen, Texas, had a mass shooting type of mass murder. And now, the reason that I want you to be mindful of the idea of a Christian's love for the law is that you would recognize that in a Christian inherently will have a law to abide by. And in amongst that law is the directive to not murder, right? So before we have to even look to civil law to help us decide how we are going to react to a given situation, we've already got a greater law guiding our decisions. The people who do not have faith in Christ have no such greater law. These people need to have some kind of law to restrain them from doing what they know deep down is bad. Which is another interesting point, right? That is what we can agree upon. Who's we? The people who argue over the idea of gun control legislation, for one thing, right? You're never going to find a gray area. There's never really nothing to agree on. You're on one side about it or you're the other, and that's the end of that. It's pretty much fucking black and white. But one thing that can be agreed on whenever there's a mass shooting like that is that the murder's bad. You bring it just down to that level. Can we agree that murder is a bad thing? And almost across the board, we could say, yes, that's a bad thing. Now, the reason that people who are not Christian, who are anti-Christ, can understand that murder is a bad thing is because not only in the heart does evil reside, but you also got your good in there too. And that is a recognition that they make when they agree that murder is a bad thing, that God, in fact, is inherent in their existence, whether they like it or not, whether they know it or not, whether they believe it or not. Everybody has a conscience to start out with. And conscience is God. It is God inside of us. That is the voice of God guiding, trying to help us in our decisions, regardless of where we've put our allegiance. And as also Apostle Paul's writing, also from the epistles, also specifically from Romans. That's Romans chapter 1, where Apostle Paul's talking about the idea of beholding the majesty of creation, the greatness, the largeness, the hugeness, you know, that is lost on people that live their lives in the cities. They never get to break out and see just how big the fucking ocean is. They don't get to the top of Old Smoky and look over the Blue Ridge Mountains at just how vast that is and how gorgeous that is, just the bigness of it all. You get in that a sense of the Creator of all things. And this is where the word, you know, everybody throws this word awesome around. Stupidly, because there's few things that are actually awesome in our existence. But when you see the grandeur and majesty of God's creation in front of you, that is awesome. You have an actual sense of awe. And that awe is a respect for God, the Creator of all things. Just kind of like an interesting side note there, right? We can agree that it's a bad thing, and it really just goes to show that even people who don't believe in God yet have God in them trying to work it out with them. There is an inherent knowledge of right and wrong, good and evil inside of us, regardless of what we believe. But that, again, is a side point. The point that I'm trying to make here is that we had a mass shooting, a mass murder. And I've discussed at least what I can reckon as four reasons a man would kill another man. And I've also revealed the solution to that, which is choosing an alliance with Christ and being transformed of the mind and having a change of heart. I've expressed where the problem comes from, the wicked in our heart. And it's unbridled, without faith. So then we go and kill. So when a murder like this happens, everybody starts looking for the reasons why. Well, the reason why is because the guy was fucked up and he didn't have faith. That's the reason why. And it's not in that order. He didn't have faith and therefore he was fucked up. And anybody who doesn't have faith has the propensity to go and murder. They have nothing to hold them back but for the civil law. And what does that even do? Well, there's consequences. If I go and murder somebody, well, then I'm going to end up in jail. So I'm not going to go murder somebody because I don't want to end up in jail. And see, when you don't have the law of God, you need the law of the land to hold you back. And if the law of the land don't hold you back, you're just going to pop off, right? People who do not advocate for guns rights, right? They want gun control. They want guns eliminated, basically. At least highly restricted. They don't like guns because A, they don't know guns, and B, they know themselves and they don't trust themselves around it. They know that they're going to go and pop off. If they can just easily go get a gun, they may someday. And when they do, they don't trust themselves. They don't trust themselves sober to handle a gun without getting mad at somebody, you know, being able to control their emotions without escalating it to the point of termination of a human life. But of course, they like a little bit of whiskey and they like a little bit of narcotics. And then, of course, then you absolutely cannot trust yourself. But when you have no moral compass, when you have no moral law, you don't have God's law guiding you and restraining you, you have to turn to the law of man to try to do God's job. And it doesn't work. The law of man doesn't work at that level. Because all that is a matter of consequences. And we get to the point where I don't give a fuck about the consequence. A moral person, a faithful person, a Christian man doesn't get to that point with God's law. You don't go there with God's law because the consequences of God's law are the worst potential consequence that a man can have, which is hell, fire, and brimstone. It's a little different than sitting in a jail cell for 6 months. Or 6 years, or 60 years. Because there you can do what most... oh, man. You know, people on the government tit that like to sit around and play video games and jerk off and eat snack cakes, drink syrupy drinks. You could pretty much do that in jail, you know? I mean, take away the video games, perhaps. But you could pretty much sit in jail and eat. Yeah, not eat liberally like you would want to pig out, but you could surely just jerk your days off into a tissue all fucking day, every day, for the rest of your life, which is pretty much what you're doing anyway. But anyway, that's a different point. Hell, I might come around to that as we go. But the Allen, Texas mass murder, you know, information has come out. You can't really talk about these things until a couple days at least have gone by. And I've waited. I know I'm not going to be able to do an episode of post-Arlen monologues talking about things relative to Texas and DFW in general, you know, without addressing this matter. I'm pretty much obligated to. But I'm not going to give the play-by-play. I'm not a news reporter over here. I've just waited time enough to get enough pieces of the puzzle to really come to at least a 90% certainty what the fuck is going on here, right? We're all looking for a reason. We're looking for a reason so we could come up with a solution or manipulate it all into our personal politics, right? I don't need a solution. I told you the solution. You turn to Christ and change your fucking heart. That's the solution. To a person, man, my man. There's no society-wide answer to this except to change society as a whole in regard to that. That's a situation also. Not going there right now. I'm talking about this murderer, this scumbag who went out and did this shit in Allen. You know, I seen enough yesterday. I talked like 3 or 4 days gone by, right? And I seen enough about his personal life to realize what he was some demented leftist who was going to pretend to be some kind of right wing guy and basically kamikaze his life. In a mass shooting, knowing that he was basically suicide by cop, he was going to lose, right? So he was going to go down in flames trying to paint some right-wing extremist message. And why do I say that? How can I justify that? Because everything they're talking about, this guy being right-wing, well, it's already, when you know that the dude is Hispanic on both sides, maternal and paternal, right? They have parents that don't even speak English. He's Hispanic. There's not white national in there. There's just not. He's got tattoos on him that speak to being some kind of neo-Nazi, but they are huge. He's got a huge swastika on his left pectoral. It's enormous, big, thick, bulky, chunky thing. And he's got something of similar proportion. The Nazi stormtrooper lightning bolts, the SS lightning bolts on his arm. So two very distinctive neo-Nazi right-wing extremist symbols thrown on there, and they're brand new. Here's the thing, they're fucking new. You can actually see they're not red around the edges like a new tattoo is, but they're raised up and they're very thick black. There's no wear on them, right? He just went and got him done. He left his family, his parents' house like 3 or 4 weeks ago, moved into a hotel room, a motel room over on Stemmons in Dallas. For 3 weeks he was in there plotting out his coup de grace, right? His grand finale in this world. His big statement. And it's all a fraud. You know, the rest of his right-wing connections or a bunch of shit that he was posting on some Russian social media app where there seemed to be no back and forth, you know. It's just him throwing shit up there. And, you know, that's not American right wing. When you're talking about right wing, and you're talking about like KKK and shit like that, like conservative people think that they're a bunch of fucking idiots. Nobody likes them, and they're not the driving force behind any fucking thing. See, what we have in this country going on now is generations of a prison gang mentality. The only place where race really drives society is the sub-society, the subculture of a prison. In the prison, things are broken up by a person's race. Races are basically forced to stick together. So, if you spend 5 years in jail, come out, you're going to come out of it with that jailhouse mentality, that racial orientation to every fucking thing, because you lived it for 5 years and it really mattered because it kept you protected, right? Now you have kids, and that's what you teach your kids. Your kids end up in jail, and it reiterates that whole thing to them again, and so on and so on. Now we've got generations of that kind of mentality built up, where in proper society, people that really just don't spend chunks of their life in jail don't think like that at all. I'm not a racist person. I'm not racially oriented. I like culture. I don't like everything about everybody's culture. There's things about some cultures that are not so cool, but the rest of it I like. And the thing I like the most about every culture is it's different than mine. So it's a way for me to break out of my own fucking neighborhood and see more of the world just by connecting with another human being that's not the same as me, not from the same background. I love that. And I want more of that. And I think that is the basic mentality here in America. For generations, we have been driving toward that place. That's the kind of society we're kind of made. As a Christian, that's what we are. That is part of the definition of being a Christian. A new humanity. Again, Apostle Paul, right? We are a new humanity. And all of these differences that separate us evaporate. We're all recognized, and we recognize in all of us, each other, our faith. That is our distinction. Not all this other bullshit. And all this bullshit, especially this racial crap, is prison gang mentality. It is the lowest level of fucking thought in our society as a whole. But now, that level of thought is trying to drive society. It has become so prevalent. But the people who are being called racist are not the racists. It's the other fucking people who are. Anybody who's come out of jail. This is why, all right, this is what I'm talking about. Why people who are, quote unquote, of color have such a big boogeyman when it comes to this right-wing extremist. Because when they were in jail, that's the kind of white people they were dealing with. Aryans and all that shit, right? That is like the least of society. But in their eyes, it's the big boogeyman. And in every white person, that's what they see. They're demented. They're fucked up. They don't have it right. They don't understand the picture. Though that kind of person is not welcome in proper society. They hide. I could not find a KKK meeting. And I'm white on both sides, right? They would not let me in. I would not find them. And I've lived in the South for a long fucking time now. People need to understand that. They are an outlying band of knuckle fucking heads, okay? That don't have a place in this world except for in jail. And that's the end of that. Not to say it doesn't exist, but it is not some big boogeyman. It is some little fucking outlier out there. And generally just not welcome. And they know it. They know it. No big boogeyman. This is what I think. All right, this is what I think. We're kind of putting it all together. This is what I think about the Allen, Texas shooter, right? The Allen, Texas shooter. He was a lifelong loser, as I just expressed, right? B, he had psychological issues. I am not making the assumption that this is the case, although whenever there's a mass shooting, you can make that assumption and probably be right 99% of the time. But there was reporting generated initially out of NBC, not NBC, ABC, the way I read it to be, that was saying that there was some military people revealing the fact that this guy had gone to basic training in the Army, and 3 months, it took him 3 months to do a 2-month program or 8-week program, about 2-month program, which he failed to do, which tells me he was being recycled continually, could not adapt to the military way of life, and ultimately was punted, right? He was punted out, and there was a question about whether it was something physical or whether it was psychological, and it turned out that it was confirmed to be a mental problem, right? So he's a lifelong loser with psychological issues. You know, I may refer to him and what he did as fraudulent. And what I mean to say is, in terms of him being some kind of far-right extremist, white nationalist, neo-Nazi type, that is not what's going on here. What is going on here, and the reason I believe this to be the case is because why the hell does he take his swastika tattoo and bring it to what? Where did he communicate his beliefs? On Russian social media? Why Russian? Why Russian? Because here's why. He is a far-right extremist, but not in the American sense of the word. He is that far-right extremist in the Ukrainian sense of the word. Yeah. I assert that he was a Ukraine flag-waving wannabe neo-Nazi. That's the Russia connection. He was razzing Russian people with Nazi stuff. Yeah, he's a lifelong loser with psychological issues. Literally a semi-retarded globalist shill whose politics reflect the regime, the current regime of this nation as it is, favoring Ukraine and covering up the crimes of the criminal syndicate that runs this country. That's who this piece of shit is. And it's always the fucking case. Every time there's some mass shooting, with very little exception, it ends up being not some far-right extremist. It ends up being some leftist, psychologically impaired, knucklehead, knuckle-fuck piece of shit. So you just wait it out. Wait for the information to bleed out, and you'll know the truth. But always, immediately, what they're going to do is make it a politically favorable, politically palatable for them. And it's like this hit and run thing, you know? It's this hit and run thing. They'll tell you stories that are just bullshit regarding a person's life. They'll give you opinions, attitudes. They'll throw shit up there, spaghetti stick, see if it sticks at the wall. And then most people will turn their attention somewhere else. And the last thing that they knew about the Allen, Texas mass shooter is that he was a white supremacist, far-right, extremist, neo-Nazi, MAGA-waving fucking idiot, right? That's what they walk away with. And that's why the mass media does what they do every fucking time. But if you wait 3, 4, 5 days, you'll find it to be the exact opposite, almost invariably. And the thing that is invariable in these situations is psychological problems, mental disorders. That's what I think about this piece of shit scumbag. So the guy's, he's a loser dressed in white sheets. That's really what it is. Now, the Brownsville mass murder that occurred also over the weekend here in Texas, right? Brownsville, Texas. You know Brownsville, Texas, do you? Brownsville, Texas is at the very southern tip of Texas. It's where the Rio Grande River That's redundant, right? Rio means river. The Rio Grande empties out into the Gulf of Mexico at the point of Brownsville, Texas, right? And Brownsville, famously the backdrop for the song Delta Dawn, right? Done by Tanya Tuckers and others back in the early to mid-70s. Delta Dawn, what's that? I'm not a singer. That song, you know that song. Well, the Delta Dawn was in Brownsville, in Brownsville, Texas. Brownsville is also noted for spawning the great Kris Kristofferson, right? Kris Kristofferson, the country songwriter and singer, a singer-songwriter. You don't really have a whole lot of classic country in the 60s and 70s without Kris Kristofferson. He wrote so many great songs that so many great artists covered. Just without him, you're missing like half of the fucking country scene in those days. He was a tremendous songwriter. And what a life. He's still alive. Very old dude. Born in the 30s, still kicking. And he's born in Brownsville, Texas, right? It all started out there for him. So in Brownsville, like I was saying, we had a mass murder over the weekend also. Now, it's a border town, so it's kind of a different circumstance than DFW in oh so many ways. And but the thing about this mass murder and why it pales in media coverage compared to what happened here in Allen, right? Allen, Texas. It was vehicular homicide. The results were the same. Many dead, many wounded, injured, critically maimed. Disgusting, horrible video out there to be seen. It was probably overall a worse display of violence than what happened in Allen. But they're both hideous, heinous tragedies performed by absolute scumbags. This guy lived. He's in a hospital receiving care, so there may yet be answers about that situation. But again, the big difference is the means by which the murder was committed, right? The instrument of death in this case was an SUV versus the evil, wicked black rifle, the AR-15 up here in DFW. Which makes, it paints an interesting picture, right? Because here I am all this time, and I'm not alone in this. Telling and retelling the basic fact that the solution to these mass murder situations is a very personal thing. It's a matter of the heart and a matter of faith. It's a matter of choice. It's a matter of good versus evil. The only thing society can do to help a person in those terms is to improve accessibility to the understanding of these things, to the knowledge of these things. To make Jesus Christ available. A society that is successful at that is a society that will minimize these kind of mass murder outbursts. Short of that, there's nothing that you're going to do. There's nothing you can do to change it. Because evil will do evil. Murderers will murder. And here's the point. The picture drawn by this weekend in Texas with the mass murders is it doesn't matter whether it's a fucking AR-15 or an SUV. People want to control that AR. They want to legislate that AR. They want to ban that AR. But what about the fucking car? What are you going to do with that? Are you going to do all the same things with that you're going to do with the rifle? Of course not, because you're not dealing in logic, because that's not what matters to you. The important thing is that gun is gone. Which is a political statement, which is what the Allen murder was. And the political statement is this: if we can get the guns out of the hands of American citizens, we American citizens who are opposed to America and wish to destroy America can accomplish that end much more easily. That's what it's all about. You're a bunch of scumbag liars with no solution. All you bring is the problem. The problem doesn't exist without your type. There's not going to be a sweeping social solution to this problem unless you want to return to society as it was before this shit became prevalent. This shit being mass murders. What was society like once upon a time? The standard. The standard of society was a Christian-based morality until cultural Marxism worked hand, tooth, and claw to turn it into a secular standard. And now we live in that secular standard. The outlier now is Christian morality. But once upon a time, for the first three quarters of the existence of this country, that was a standard. And I'm not saying every single person was Christian. I'm not saying that it was a Christian nation in its origins. It had principles that were Christian, and it was the standard of society. That's all. A lot of people were not with it. They were outliers. In those days, you had things like homosexuals staying in the closet. Why? Because the standard was Christian morals, and they were opposite of the standard. They had to hide what they were doing. Now, in a secular standard society, they can come out into the daylight and prance around and do all this fucking crazy shit that's happening. And that's just one example. But the drugs and everything, every bad thing that every person is into is now something they could parade out in the light. Drugs were illegal. You had to hide that. When I was a kid and I was on drugs, it was always cops and robbers. You had to do everything in secret, in the shadows. You get that term underworld, right? It's where the organized crime operates with all their extortion and murder and theft and fraud, right? All that, and gambling, vice, all that shit, the prostitution. It's the underworld. What does that mean? It's a place of darkness. Things are not brought to light. Why? Because the social standard of the time demands that. All we can do on an entire sweeping social level to mitigate this problem of mass murder is to resume to the standard of Christian morality. Again, I'm not saying that means everybody's got to turn Christian. Just return the standard up there and go back in your closet, go back into the cobweb corner, go back underground, go back down into the subways and sewers, bring all the filth and put it back where it belongs. When the standard is such, everything follows. The laws become as such. The law enforcement becomes as such. Society as a whole changes. But no. The people don't want that. People, the left side don't want that. Because they're doing dark deeds. They're living immoral lifestyles and they don't want to be criminals about it. And that's just the basic fact of it all. And because America for three quarters of its existence was opposed to their lifestyles, they're opposed to America, and they want to obliterate it, and they want to make sure that they have a place to live that never ever again stuffs them back in the fucking closet. In the meantime, if you're going to be prancing out in open daylight displays of homosexuality and bestiality and transgenderism and dancing your cock around in the faces of four-year-old kids, all the crazy shit that's going on, just on that level of it, and then you bring in the drugs and everything like that, you're gonna live like every... what I'm trying to say is every single thing like that Jesus listed in the verses that I read, inspired by John B. Wells, as I was, right, from Mark 7, everything that he listed there as the ways of wicked is going to come into the light also. That includes murder, okay? So while you're dancing around with your fucking rainbows and unicorns and butterflies, the murderers are going to be up out there too and doing what murderers do. And they're going to kill somebody. And if you're in a society that excludes Christians, they're going to kill you. This is what we don't understand, right, in general, when it comes to dealing with the devil. When you conjure up demons, the first thing they do is devour you. You don't control them, right? So you create a wicked world, that turns on you. It's just anybody on drugs or like an alcoholic like me knows that, right? All that shit turns on you. It starts out like, this is great, this is fun. You know, it's a whole different way of looking at things. My mind is open. And it's good for like a couple of months, and all of a sudden it becomes darkness. And ultimately it becomes despair and death. That's how wicked turns. That's the way of wicked. It draws you in, slaps you around, and kills you. Anyway, going off on a couple of tangents here. I was talking about the need for civil law before earlier, right? The Antichrist need for civil law because they lack moral law, right? Lacking a moral compass, you need something that's going to hold you down from doing something that you're going to regret because there's going to be circumstances for it, right? You don't want to just go out and kill because you don't want to end up in jail. Or in Texas where they kill you back, right? You kill somebody, we'll kill you back. Who's that? That was Ron White, one of his comedy shows. Ron White's a Texas guy, and he's a funny dude, right? But I brought up that matter of that need for the civil law when you don't have the moral compass, when you don't have a moral law. Not only do we already have civil laws that work against mass murder, right? Like, for example, this Allen event occurred in Allen, Texas, right, where I go to church. It's right up the road from where I am right now. It occurred in a shopping center called the Allen Premium Outlets, which, of course, I've been to. Everybody around here has been to it. I haven't been to it in like 6 years. It's generally not my place. I don't buy the kind of stuff they sell there, generally. But I've been there, and I ain't been in a while, but I had heard through the grapevine when this incident was happening, or shortly thereafter, that the entire shopping center is a 30-06/30-07 gun-free zone. So there you go. That's law. That individual, that scumbag, you know, the loser dressed in white sheets, basically, as I describe him as, he went into a gun-free zone with guns and did his killing. And he had it all planned out. Took 3 weeks of planning. He broke the law. Imagine that. And don't you know? Now, I don't know if it's this way where you live, but in Texas, it's illegal to murder another person. Did you know that? Is your town like that? Is your city like that? Is your county like that? Is your state like that? Is it illegal where you live to murder? Well, it's illegal to murder, and he went and murdered all these people. It's not legal. Why would he do such a thing if it's not legal? Are you getting my point? For some people, the law don't mean shit. To be criminal, by definition, means you don't have any fucking regard for the law at all. So what is the law going to do when you have a demented individual who's just bent on killing people? People who are looking to gun control legislation to resolve this are either stupid or lying or both. The ones who ain't stupid are, like I said earlier, manipulating these situations for their political ends. And their political ends are to overthrow this nation and to create a complete secular nation and wipe out all their opposition and live in their utopia, which will turn on them and kill them too. Because they don't know better. They don't understand how evil works. They think they're above all these things. Who's they? You know, I keep saying they. Well, I'm talking about... Well, I used the word Antichrist about 100 times already. Anything that is instead of Christ or opposed to Christ is basically Antichrist, right? See, in my worldview, my understanding, the way it lays out for me, it's kind of simple. It's, what's that word that everybody fucking hates? Binary. It's a either or. It's black or fucking white. You are Christian or you are anti-Christian. And those are the two kinds of people in the world. Is that a really simple outlook? That's how I look at things. And I know plenty of you are going to hate me for that. Even Christians be like, huh? Yeah, you all think about it. You're Christian or you're not. And then within Christianity, of course, you've got the divided church. That's a whole other fucking story that has driven me up the wall. But I pursued it to its ends to find truth, and I have the assimilation point. And if you ever want to talk about that, look me up, okay? We can undivide this thing. But, different story. Who are these people? They're Antichrist. And that means they are people without moral compass. They are people... lawless. Anything goes with them. They are people of basically poor habits, poor thinking, bad judgment, bad ideas, lazy lifestyles. The habits that we have in our lives really set like a foundation for our spiritual condition, right? As a Christian, our habit is to be in communion with God. And our spiritual condition is contingent upon the quality of that communion. Without that, we are... captaining our own ship and we're kind of left to do whatever it takes to keep it afloat, which involves wicked ways sometimes. It's the convenient thing to do is the evil thing to do. I me try to put this in other terms, because I don't think I expressed that very well. You got lifestyles, right? It's just in general, right? You got a physical lifestyle, a job like mine. I have a physical job. It's physically demanding. And then you got sedentary jobs. You sit at a desk all day. Not so physically demanding. Now, for a man, and I'm not going to talk about women because that's a whole other thing. Like women, I don't, you know, women are women. I don't understand women. I don't pretend to. But with men, here's what you got. You got hormone in you called testosterone. That's kind of a distinction of a man. And that testosterone can go one of two ways. It could go out the front of your fucking pecker, or it can go up into your bloodstream. Now, you got it up in your bloodstream, it's causing you to be more and more manly. It is the fire, the fuel of your masculinity inside of you. When you have a physical lifestyle, you are drawing the testosterone out of your nutsack up into your bloodstream, and it's causing you to be more masculine. When you are sedentary, that doesn't happen. And then when you jerk yourself off 8 times a day, you're pissing all that testosterone away. So even if you do get up and do something physical, you're not drawn from it. But if you're jerking off 8 times a day, you're probably not doing much physical anyhow anyway. Probably doing a whole lot of couch potatoing. Right? That's a word, potatoing. That's in the Maverick 88 dictionary. Look it up. Potatoing. Couch potatoing. Laying around and jerking off all day. You're a low testosterone motherfucker. You're a drained testosterone motherfucker. No testosterone in the blood motherfucker. Non-masculine motherfucker. You are suffering from a condition, right? I mean, you couple that. Now, I'm talking about habits, right? This is what I'm trying to explain about our habits and our spiritual condition, right? If we're in the habit of living that kind of lifestyle, right, that where we just don't get testosterone up in the bloodstream because of the other things that we're doing and not doing, right? Laying around all the time and masturbating all the time. You know, the other habits that go with couch potatoing. That's funny to me. I don't know why. Couch potatoing. The other habits that go with that are eating snack cakes and drinking the syrupy drinks, right? A lot of cheese, a lot of chemicals, right? The chemical cheese, remember? Chemical cheese. If you're really a fan, you'd know what I'm talking about. All of these things as an ongoing way of life, day after day, week after week, month after month, even year after year, will put you into a condition that is known as betosis. Betosis. B-E-T-O-S-I-S. Betosis. Right? And basically that is a condition that has drained the masculinity out of you and now makes you susceptible to ideas and notions of questions of gender dysphoria, gender issues in general. But it all begins with betosis, which is the result of couch potatoing. Not getting that testosterone up in the blood. Not doing the things that we need to do as men to be men. Now, speaking of betosis, right? My neighborhood lesbians, I told this before, I think. I got neighborhood lesbians that live across the street. And during the election season last year for Governor of Texas, they had thrown up a Beto sign. You know, that's what they do. Every 2 years, there's another fucking Beto sign up on the lawn. And they're funny. You know, most people, they put their political signs, the political yard signs, and they face them to where, like, drive-by traffic and walking on down the sidewalk traffic can read them. Now, these lesbians, they point it across the street so my wife and I can read it, right? They got their Beto sign out there, right? The little Beto, the replica Whataburger ketchup, right? They copied the Whataburger ketchup, the little ketchup packet, and they made a Beto sign. So they put their Beto sign up during the gubernatorial election season last year, and they left it up for months and months afterwards, even after the guy lost, because that's what Beto does, and that's what a Beta does. They lose. They just lose and lose and lose. So what's this, a third time since I've been in Texas, he went up for some kind of major election and just got slaughtered, you know. Anyway, but, you know, your election's over, you take your sign down, right? No, not the, they left it for months. And then one day I just noticed it wasn't there anymore. It's like they went out in the middle of the night when I couldn't see them doing it, very discreetly, you know, pulled up their little Beto sign, stuck it in the back of their fucking Prius or whatever, you know, wait till next year or the year after, try it again, right? 2024 perhaps. But the Beto sign is gone. So, no. I continue, you know, speaking of front yards, I continue with my front yard landscaping projects, plural, redoing the entire front yard and house. And, it, you know, there's a lot. I've done a lot. There's a long way to go. I got to say, at this point, it doesn't look great, but you can tell something's happening. Something's fixing to happen there. Some things are in place, and eventually, you know, I'll get it done. Eventually, halfway through, it'll start to look like something, right? And in the end, I got my own coup de grace, my own grand finale. And what I'm going to do, in opposition to that fucking Beto sign that comes up, I'm going to put up a permanent cross. Not just a cross, like a cross, an Orthodox cross, because that's my approach to faith in Christ, right? The Orthodox cross is just something a little bit more than an ordinary cross, a Protestant cross, and it's a lot more intimidating. It actually has got some kind of, like, quote-unquote badass factor to it. I wear one around my neck. Most Orthodox people do. Antichrist motherfuckers, like here in the workplace, they see it and they're like, cool cross, man. They have no idea what they're looking at. They think it's probably like some kind of black metal fucking death cross or some shit. That's Orthodox. Orthodox is what it means. Orthodox. You look up. Look up Orthodox as a word. Take it. Break out your dictionary, okay? But that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a big old chunky fucking bright Orthodox cross, and it's going to be a part of my entire landscape project scenery. And it's going to be facing straight across the street.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.